Several years ago, life for me felt like it did in some ways for the prophet Habakkuk. After he complained to God about the abhorrent spiritual atmosphere in Judah, only then to be told by God that the answer to his questions, the answers to what God was going to do about the wickedness and the evil in Judah was to send the Babylonians. And then Habakkuk was left asking the question, how God could use somebody so wicked to punish his own people? And God's answer was simply, when their sin is full, when they have reached a level of sinfulness, I will punish them as well. And I'm sure as God said that to Habakkuk, Habakkuk felt like, well, if the saying would have been invented, Habakkuk would have been saying he felt like he was getting out of the frying pan and into the fire. And then he probably would have said that as he got into the fire, it was only for the fire to continue to intensify as somebody turned up the heat higher and higher. For me, it was being a part of a church, a part of a body like this, where we felt like we were part of a family, only to be asked to resign. And I felt like at the time that I was supposed to continue in full-time vocational ministry, but after 3 months of searching, there was nothing. And then we had to leave where we were and to leave where we were living and pick up and move everything and spend several months living with Brenna's parents. 6 months in, I still had no job. You know when you might have problems when even Walmart won't hire you, but... Oh, wow. 6 months in, I still had no job, and it was about that time that Brenna miscarried. And it felt like I had trusted God and asked him to protect us from the unpleasant, and within that to be thrown into the wicked, thrown from the wicked inside to the wicked outside, and for three more years, I felt kind of like I was wandering in captivity as I trusted God for what he said or what I believed he was saying and calling me to do, and simply waiting for God to make the next move. And I know that may not be the worst case scenario. In fact, there are a lot of things that I could think of that probably would have been worse and would be worse even today, but I felt like at that time I was on a journey I did not want to be on. And I know that you've been there too. The situations are different, the challenges are unique to each one of us, but we've been there. You see, the question isn't when will the difficult times come, rather it's when the difficult times come, how will we react? Especially if it seems like you're jumping from the frying pan into an ever-intensifying fire. And Habakkuk heard from God, and he knew that he could trust Yahweh. And I would summarize the statement of Habakkuk, the statements of chapter 3 of the book of Habakkuk, in two words. Even if I don't see The other side of God's action, Habakkuk says, I will still worship and wait. In fact, in the book of Habakkuk, this is what he says in the third chapter, beginning with the 16th verse. It says, I heard and my inward parts trembled. At the sound, my lips quivered. Decay enters my bones, and in my place I tremble, because I must wait quietly for the day of distress, for the people who will invade us. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there will be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there should be no cattle in the stalls, yet, and this is a big yet, I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he has made my feet like the hind's feet, and he makes me walk on high places. And the last part is for those who would worship. It says, for the choir director on my stringed instruments. I don't believe that Habakkuk ever capitulates on his stance that Babylon seems like a bad answer. Yet what he says is that even if that is what you choose to allow or use, I will still trust you and watch steadfastly for your word to come true. He starts by saying, though, and that's where we're going to begin this morning, with that word, though. Habakkuk looks and he says, what we've looked at the last 2 weeks, he hears and he sees God sending the Babylonians. The thing that God said, even if I told you everything that was going to happen, Habakkuk, you would be utterly confused and you wouldn't understand. He said, even though this is what takes place, even though destruction and devastation is what is about to happen, you see, we go from bad to worse. Habakkuk says there in verse 17, he gives three groups of two things. Three groups of two things. And he says, even though the fig tree should not blossom and there should be no fruit on the vines. Now, to you and me, we read those things, and those words simply talk about a tree that's blossoming and grapevines that aren't producing grapes. It sounds unnecessary. To the people Habakkuk was writing to, this was simply saying, there are going to be some inconveniences. The figs were kind of a tree in ancient Israel. They weren't a necessity. You didn't live off of the figs. In fact, figs came once a year and you could eat the figs. I don't know how many of you are like me, but I consider Fig Newtons a treat. Once in a great while, I'd pick up a package of Fig Newtons. Well, the Israelites didn't put cakes around their figs, but they ate them as a luxury. They didn't have to have figs, but it was nice when they did. And the grapevines, they produced the wine, and wine was one of the primary staple drinks of the people of the ancient Near East, especially there in the area where Judah was. You know, today we might call it Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola or some other soda or I would say coffee. You know, something that you don't have to have. You know, we have to have water. Water is a requirement for life. If we can put something in our water so that we can enjoy the flavors, the tastes, that's a bonus. Well, that's the way it was with the grapes. They drank the wine, and there are some benefits that they had, but they didn't have to have the wine. And so the figs and the wine are inconveniences. And Habakkuk says at the beginning, he says, well, even if there are some inconveniences. But then he goes on and he moves from the inconveniences to the necessary substances for life. He says, even if the olives should fail and the fields produce no food. So he's saying the olives. Now, the olives were used primarily for making oil. I don't think they put them on their pizzas and their salads the way that we do today. Other people do. I don't. But they used the olive oil. The olive oil was important for two things. One, it was important for cooking. Almost everything they cooked with the oil from the olives. But it was also necessary for light. That's where they got the oil that they used to light their lamps. Where they got the oil that allowed them to do things in homes that were dark most of the day and even darker at night. They would use the olive oil. It was a necessity of life. And the crops of the field, he's talking about the wheat, the barley, the things that they would use to make the bread. Most of their diets, sorry if you like the keto diet, it wasn't keto. Sorry if you like Atkins, it wasn't Atkins. It was bread. Bread was their main dish all the time. You had bread for every meal. You know, if you're like some of the people in my family, they complain if they have to have the same meal a couple of times a week. Me personally, you could give me a pizza every day for lunch and I'd be okay. You could give me a sandwich with the same kind of lunch meat every day for lunch, I'd be okay. In fact, it makes life easier. You don't have any choices. They didn't have a lot of choices. They ate some fruit when fruit was in season. They ate meat generally at the festival times. So when you read the book of Leviticus or the book of Exodus, Numbers, and it talks about the feasts that the people of Israel were supposed to go celebrate in Jerusalem, that was the primary time that they would eat meat, was at those feasts. Because unlike today, you couldn't produce meat and sell it at the local grocery store and we all go in and buy our individual cuts of meat, you know, several people from the same lamb or the same cow. The primary food that they would eat were the grains that you could store, not just for a season, but for several years, if necessary. And so they go from the inconveniences. Hosea says, okay, God, this is what I know is going to happen. We're going to go from the inconveniences to the needed substances for sustenance that are not going to be present. And then he says to the provisions for necessity. I got to decide if I want to say necessary or necessity and not try to say them both. The provisions for the necessities of life. Yes, they only ate meat a few times a year as a luxury, but here is the other side of that coin. They always needed the flocks from the field. You know, scientists, social scientists tell us that we need three things: food, shelter, and okay, you all need to go back to school.
Clothing.
A Karen passes for the day. Food, shelter, and clothing. Here's the thing. We don't wear a lot of wool garments anymore. But for the Israelites, if you wanted clothing, most of, if not all of the clothing you would own would be made from wool. The sheep and the goats would be sheared and their hair would be turned into wool, and you would wear wool clothing. And if you had a blanket, it was probably made of wool. And many of the things that they needed to keep warm and to protect themselves from the elements were made out of wool. And so you needed the sheep and the goats. Not necessarily because you would eat them, but because they provided necessities for life. And if you ate only a little bit of lamb through the year, you ate even less beef. The cattle, most of the cattle weren't used for food. They were used for making sure that you could plant your crops, for plowing the fields when it was time to plow, so that you could go back through and you could plant. And Habakkuk says that things are going to go from bad to worse. You're going to go from a few inconveniences to a few of the necessities, to even the ability to provide the necessities. You go from bad to worse. And Habakkuk says, even though those are the things that are going to take place. And I kind of think of it about it like dominoes. How many of you have ever not stacked dominoes, but set dominoes up on their ends in a line and then pushed over the first domino? Several of you. Yeah, it was a fun thing to do when I was a kid. You could destroy things, and then you could rebuild them, and you could destroy them again, and there was no harm done. I've learned over the years that there is an interesting thing about dominoes. When you set them on the ends, there is a certain amount of potential energy in those dominoes. And if you push the first one over, the potential energy of the first one goes on to the second one and transfers its energy, and they continue to transfer their energy down the line until the last one falls over and hits whatever surface you have it on, and suddenly the potential energy is gone. It's all used. But there is a thing called amplification. And so if you take a domino and you set one domino on end, it has enough potential energy in it to knock over a domino 1.5 times its size. So if you take a standard domino, you could almost double it in size, and one domino can knock over the second one. Scientists say that by the time you put the 13th domino, you are more than 2 billion times the potential energy from the first domino to the 13th. In other words, if you could get the spacing right, you could knock over one domino that would knock over a bigger domino, and by the time you got to the 13th domino, you could knock over a skyscraper simply by pushing over a single domino. It blows my mind to think about that, but that's kind of the way it seems in life. The first thing goes bad, and you say, oh, that's awful, but I can handle it. And then in quick succession, the second thing happens, and you say, this is going to be more difficult, but I can handle it too. But it seems a whole lot bigger than it would have if the first one hadn't been there. And the first one seems a whole lot bigger if the second one is there. And so by the time you get to the third or the fourth or the fifth thing, if you're looking like Habakkuk and you're saying there's three groups of things, but there's six things, by the time you get to that sixth thing and you say, there won't be any figs, and there won't be any grapes, and there won't be any I gotta look back at my verse here. Oh, there won't be any olives, and there, see, I don't like olives, so I forget them.
There won't be any olives, and there won't be any grain, and there won't be any sheep, and then there won't even be any cattle. What he's saying is things are going to go from bad to worse, from the fire frying pan to the fire, and the fire is going to continue to get hotter and hotter and hotter. And doesn't life seem like the dominoes fall one after another? You lose a job, a medical diagnosis, and you say, I can handle those things. But then in the midst of it, the next domino falls, and then the third, and then the fourth. You can't find employment, and now you don't have a home because you couldn't pay the mortgage any longer. Or in the midst of it, inflation happens. And one thing after another, it seems to snowball. And Habakkuk says, even if those things, even if that intensification happens, he says, there are some results. And here's the interesting thing. Habakkuk looks and he says, though these things are going to happen, these bad things are going to happen, and he says, here are the results. And Habakkuk isn't ever going to see the things that he's talking about transpiring. Oh, he may be present when Babylon comes and conquers Judah. There's a good likelihood that he saw going from the frying pan of the wickedness of Judah and Jerusalem to the fire of the Babylonian. He saw that. But history tells us that he wouldn't have lived long enough to see all that God had promised would happen to Babylon. He says, I'm going to stand here, God, and I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust you even if I don't see what you're going to do. Because he trusted that God would remain faithful to do the things that he had promised to do. You see, Habakkuk does, or what Habakkuk does in the waiting, is what we need to see. It's what Habakkuk does as things go from the fire to the from the frying pan to the fire. Because we're going to have those times in life. There are going to be those moments, those days, those weeks when we think that we're going from bad to worse. And it's how Habakkuk responds. He gives us the though the bad thing comes, and though I'm not going to see the results. He goes from though to yet. Yet. Even if the bad things happen, even though the bad things are happening, yet. Yet I will rejoice. I will rejoice. That's probably not the first response we have when the bad things happen. It's probably not the first things that we think of and the first thing that we want to do when we see things toppling one after another and the intensification and the amplification of the problems continues. But Habakkuk says, even if, and he says it like this, he says, yet I will exalt the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Even if this is what you think needs to happen, if this is what you allow to happen, even if you use the Babylonians and it is a period of time before you begin to judge them, God, I will rejoice. He's not rejoicing in the situation. Habakkuk is not happy that Judah is wicked and deserving of punishment. Habakkuk is not rejoicing in the fact that God is going to use the Babylonians. In fact, he's already, and we looked at it last week, calling out God on his choice of using the Babylonians. No, he says, even despite the devastation, I will still rejoice. And this meant that Habakkuk had to have learned in the past that God was faithful, so that when the present problems arose, he could trust God to do what he had said he would do, and that his workings through the situations in Judah and in Babylon would be for the benefit of his people. You see, the though, or the yet, and the rejoicing in the yet doesn't make the though disappear. It doesn't simply say, oh, if I praise God in the midst of the storm will stop. If I praise God when I'm standing in the fire, it doesn't mean that the fire will disappear. Rather, it says to God, I'm going to worship you because I need the strength that I can only get from you, and I only get from worshiping you. And so Habakkuk says, even if this is what happens, yet I will praise you. And it's not about simply the praise. It's not about removing the problem, but it's about a reminder of who Yahweh is. And Habakkuk says this in two things. He says that Yahweh gives strength. I know where my strength comes from, the psalmist says. In Psalm 121, verse 2, he says, I know where my help comes from. It comes from the Lord. It comes from Yahweh. It comes from the covenant God of Israel. My strength doesn't come from anything outside of me. My ability to bear up underneath of the problems of life comes about because God gives me strength. And Habakkuk says, God gives me strength, but then I like the second picture. Because the second picture he gives, he says that he gives me feet like the deer that run around on the mountains. Now, I didn't go look for pictures of deer in the mountains of Israel. Rather, my picture is probably skewed, but there are several shows I like to watch that are based in the mountains of Alaska. And in the mountains of Alaska, you see these rocks that just roll down the hills if you walk wrong. And you watch people walk, and they make it's difficult for them to walk sideways, let alone up and down. And yet you see out in front of them the doll sheep just running and prancing. And it's like God says to Habakkuk, yeah, there's challenges. Yeah, there's all of this that could happen. But let me give you strength. Let me give you security. Let me give you the sure-footedness of a sheep on rocky crags, where other animals can't go freely and easily, the deer do. And God says, or Habakkuk says, that God is the one who's going to give him the strength and be the one who gives them the ability to go through what is happening. And he says, not only is God going to give, but he says, let me tell you about who God is. As he worships God, he says who God is. And he talks about God being trustworthy. He doesn't use the word, but rather he simply, by telling us that God is going to see him through, he's saying, God, you are trustworthy. I trust you to get me through what you have said will happen. Not only is he trustworthy, but he is strong. He's able. He doesn't just say he will. He has the ability. He has the strength. As I was reading this passage again and again this week, the song, "The Mighty Fortress Is My God," when I came to the strength of God is what came to my mind. The old Martin Luther hymn, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." He's a strong place. He's a place that cannot be defeated, or a God who cannot be defeated. And Habakkuk says that he is caring enough to bring salvation. He will save them. Habakkuk knows that the bad things are going to happen. We've been promised in life not that everything is going to go perfectly according to our plans, but that in this life we will have trouble. And Habakkuk tells us that our answer to trouble should be "even if." Horatio Spafford was having one of those years, from the frying pan to the fire. See, Horatio Spafford in 1871 saw the Great Chicago Fire destroy much of his land holdings in the city of Chicago and wiping out much of his income and wealth. But Horatio decided that he would send his family and go on a vacation himself. And part of his going was to help D.L. Moody with some meetings that he was holding in England. And so he was going to go and help Moody, but he got detained on some important business. But he sent his wife and his daughters, four of them, on ahead. And his plan was to catch up as soon as possible. Partway across the Atlantic Ocean, the boat that they were sailing on was struck by another vessel and sunk within minutes, killing all four of Horatio Spafford's daughters. His wife survived and made it to England, and Spafford sailed as soon as possible to meet his wife in Wales. And on that journey, when they reached the approximate point where the ship had sunk, the captain of the ship he was sailing on alerted him to the fact. And sometime about that, in that general time frame, Horatio Spafford wrote this. He says, "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let the blessed assurance control that Christ has arranged my helpless estate and shed his own blood for my soul. And the Lord haste the day when my faith shall be sight and the clouds be rolled back as a scroll. The trump shall resound and the Lord shall descend. Even so, it is well with my soul." Like Habakkuk, worship was where Spafford found the strength and the comfort to go on. For me too, it was worship. Mine, however, came from the words of Lamentation 3, set to music and arranged as a modern hymn by Thomas Chisholm. And he wrote, "Great is thy faithfulness, O God my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not thy compassions. They fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever wilt be." The chorus says, "Great is thy faithfulness. Great is thy faithfulness. Morning by morning new mercies I see. All I have needed, thy hand hath provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. Summer and winter and springtime and harvest, sun, moon, and stars in their courses above.
join with all nature in manifold witness to thy great faithfulness, mercy, and love. Pardon for sin and a peace that endureth, thine own near presence to cheer and to guide, strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow, blessings all mine and the 10,000 beside. Habakkuk saw the fire that was coming. And he looked to God and he said, even if I don't see the beauty on the other side, even if I don't see the devastation that you will bring on Babylon, God, I trust you. Even if I don't see what you have promised, and I have to wait until the other side of eternity to know peace, I will find strength in you. And strength comes through worship. I don't know what the fires, what the frying pans, what the ever intensification of heat is in your life. Maybe we know some of it as we share as brothers and sisters, but it's not about the frying pan, it's not about the fire. It's about worshiping and trusting the God who can see us through. And this morning, we need to worship. Let's stand together as we worship.